Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, Today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of Today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Georgie Jorgensen. And our guest today is Jeff Jang from the Lurie Besikoff Lapidus & Company, a CPA firm and consulting firm. Jeff, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jeff, our topic today is strategies in your China strategies. And could we start a little bit about your background? Can you tell us where you're from and how long you've been with Lurie Besikoff?
Okay, definitely. I'm a native Chinese, and I was born in Beijing and grew up in Beijing, got my undergraduate degree in Beijing at a very good small elite college. And then I worked 2 years in China. And in the fall of 97, I came to the University of Minnesota for my graduate studies. So I studied and worked at the University of Minnesota for 4 years and got my 2 master's degrees from the U, and 1 in political science with a major in comparative politics and political economy in East Asia, and my 2nd master's in human resources and industrial relations from Carlson School. So after I graduated from Carlson, I got my offer, you know, working for Lurie Besikoff Lapidus with their employee benefits division as a pension, you know, consultant. So I did a lot of pension proposal designs, those kind of sophisticated pension plans like cash balance plans, cross-tested, you know, profit sharing plans. So I spent like the first 3-4 years with the firm doing those pension work. But I always, you know, think about my China background and my resources and network that I have built through the years in China and in the United States. So it's very interesting. When I worked, when I worked and studied at the U, I worked at the University China Center. And the China Center is a very unique organization. It's one of the 2 public China-focused organizations with a mission to facilitate exchanges between academic, governmental, and political organizations between the 2 countries.
It's almost cross-platform.
Yeah, yeah. So I worked 2 years there and under the director kind of leadership of Dr. Hong Yang, the former China Center director, and he brought a lot of China initiatives to the community and to the university, doing a lot of business educational exchange programs and started a training programs for bringing in Chinese executives from China to get a training here at university.
This was with the China Center at the university?
That was with
and
the China Center.
While you were working for Lurie, you were working, you came all the way from China and went through 2 MBAs, and then you got to work with our friend Max Wyman.
Right. That's actually was kind of before I started at the firm. You know, that was during my school time, you know. I worked at the China Center for those exciting, you know, China initiatives and the China programs. So I made a lot of friends in the local with the local Chinese business communities and also with the different Chinese organizations back in China.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, with those kind of resources, I could do something at the firm. And it's all thing about the timing. And at that time, from time to time, you know, some clients will come to me since I was the only Chinese, you know, professional working at a firm. And the firms was quite encouraged me to help the clients with the different issues, answer their question about China. So that's kind of started my idea to do something or offer some, you know, valuable service for our clients about doing business in China.
So this got started obviously because of your background and where you've come from.
Right,
education in the China Center, but existing clients of Larry Besikoff had some interest in doing business in China.
Yeah.
And so they said, Jeff, can you help?
Yeah, definitely. And it's good at the firm's leadership to realize that, you know, the globalization is happening at, you know, as quite a faster pace, and a lot of things going on between China and the United States. And the firm have me as kind of like a secret weapon or special resources. You know, it's quite a natural, you know, click for we to set up international business consulting with a focus on China to facilitate a lot of things, you know, between our clients and the China market.
So before we get into just how that works, can you give us a little update about how the recent economic problems have affected China?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. You know, China, people all know that a lot of exciting things happening in China. And China, ever since the opening up in the late 1970s, has become, you know, the third major economic power in the world, behind, you know, United States and Japan, and then also the third largest trading power in the world. And besides that, you know, China has experienced a very rapid growth in terms of quick urbanization, education, and a lot of different things. But still, as a player of this international business realm, China got hit very hard by this major economic downturn. And there was a sharp drop of jobs and also the trades with the world because of the, you know, sharp decrease of the purchase orders from overseas market. You know, that was quite apparent. And at one time, the employment, because of that, you know, came up to, you know, 20 million. That was per source of those kind of statistics. So the Chinese government has made a lot of efforts to try to make a switch and, you know, revive the economy. And it kicked off a lot of major incentives, you know, something are similar to what we have here in the States, like the big incentives plans to do a lot of infrastructure construction, railway, you know, technology revamping in those major infrastructure, railway, airport construction, those kind of things. And they budgeted 4 trillion Chinese yuan, which is about, you know, 587 billion U.S. dollars equivalent.
So this was incentives provided by the Chinese government?
By the Chinese government, yep.
Now, Jeff, you were telling me in China there's a strong central government?
Yeah, I would think so, yes.
But then the taxation on businesses in China is locally based, is that right?
Right, yeah. The central government has their, they call it, you know, state tax authorities or, you know, state administration of tax. And they have a different level. They have a provincial level. They have a local county level. They have a city level. So basically, if a business decides to do business in one spot in one city, they will have to submit a tax and all those compliance materials to their local tax authorities. And on a monthly basis, you know, that's quite a big major difference from doing business in this country.
So there's a monthly financial filing requirement?
Exactly.
And do they pay the taxes monthly as well?
Exactly. Yeah, they pay the tax based on their monthly financials, and sometimes it could be a like estimate, and then they do the final year-end return like us, you know, but
file that with the central government.
Yeah, exactly.
And monthly, that's funneled up to the central government.
It's still submitted to the local, and basically the local tax authority, you know, they have all the power and the monitoring and, you know, information collection, you know, audit those authorities.
And what type of tax rates are they paying it on?
That's actually a very good question. China has experienced some major corporate income tax change ever since the beginning of 2008. So before that, Chinese government offered foreign invested firms major tax break, like 3-year wave of any corporate income tax, no matter
to attract foreign investment.
Exactly,
you know, that's zero tax for 3 years, and then
a 50% discount or exemption for the next 2 years, and then it will start the normal tax rate. And the local Chinese firms are actually taxed at a higher tax rate at about 35% before this new tax legislation change. So, beginning at 2008, after a lot of pressure and a long time, kind of like lobbying, by the Chinese firms, they thought, you know, that's not fair. Especially after China joined the WTO, you know, the domestic firms should be treated the same. You know, that will be very healthy for Chinese firms to grow and develop. So the Chinese government then made a decision to pass through a legislation, and basically now, the same 25% corporate income tax for both Chinese and foreign invested firms.
Right.
But foreign invested firms still got some advantage if they are invested in high tech or environment-friendly technology. They can still get the 15%, you know, a much discounted, you know, tax rate.
Lower tax rates.
Exactly.
For specialized industries.
Right, exactly. That shows Chinese government focus to kind of attract a certain investment other than just, you know, low-cost, labor, you know, intense, you know, environmental and friendly business. You know, those businesses are not welcome in China, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like China is taking on capitalism, and they're dealing with taxes and incentives and business, and it sounds a lot like us, is what it sounds like.
Exactly. You know, I would think, you know, China now is rather an extreme version of capitalism, which means, you know, a lot of business, they are so focused on profit, and they even, you know, put aside the business ethics, you know, integrity, those kind of things, you know, and their responsibility for the society. And it's kind of interesting. A lot of American people still hold image that, you know, China is a communist country, you know, that they are different from us. But I can tell an interesting story from one of my trips to China. And I led a business delegation back in 2005, and we traveled to 6 cities in China. And
now, on behalf of Larry Besikoff?
On behalf of Larry Besikoff.
Brought some customers and friends and led a group to China.
Yeah, led the group to China. And for many of them, you know, it was their first trip to China. They still have this old image about China, but when they see what's going on, when they see how modern Chinese cities look like, they were just shocked. And we traveled to Yiwu, and this is a small city, but with those commodity trading center, wholesale retail center, even bigger than North America here in the city. So they were so impressed. And toward the end of day, we were having dinner with the mayor of the city. And so one of our delegation member asked the mayor, you know, pardon me, Mr. Mayor, you know, if I'm now too rude, is China still a communist country? And the mayor,
a tough question.
Right, is also the party secretary, which means the number one leader in a Chinese city. So he's so smart. He didn't say, yes, we are, or yes, no, we are not. So he just said, you know, actually, we run under a full market economy like you. And the only major difference is, you know, we are one party ruled government and, you know, and a country. And this party is the Chinese Communist Party. And the United States is our two-partied, you know, political system. You know, that's our major difference. And we think, you know, a one-party system works more efficient in China. And for all this development in China, you know, we can, if we think the thing is right and we can make a decision and there's no dispute or discussion, we just do it. So that's the reason why the city has been growing so fast ever since, you know, it started in the 1980s.
He sounds like he was a pretty good politician as well as pretty good mayor. So back to how business owners, if business owner is interested in learning about China, in maybe outsourcing some manufacturing in China, in maybe opening a manufacturing facility in China, then how did you develop this? Did you start with developing your China contacts and then start bringing groups over? How did this come about at your firm?
Sure, sure. And we don't have any branch office, you know, in China, and a lot of people asked us, you know, whether we have an office in China. You know, we don't. And for a firm like our size, we use a different strategy. You know, we build up a strong network of different firms, professional firms, including legal law firms and CPA firms, good ones, you know, in China, and also like IP protection, you know, agencies, engineering firms, and you know, sourcing agency, like quality control, you know, teams, those kind of things. And we fully utilize those local resources as our arm on the ground to help our clients to do business.
So you've made a lot of trips to China to check out some of the
exactly,
firms and find,
you know,
the good law firms and the
right,
good engineering
right.
firms that can help your clients.
Yep. Oh, our development of our business model relies heavily on developing a strategic relationship, guanxi, you know, in China. And guanxi is a very important word. It means that it's not just a connection, not just someone you know. It's someone you develop a friendship and the trust with, you know, along the years. And that's the relationship that you can count on in some special or difficult times. So there's a lot of mutual trust between us and our partners or alliance firms, you know, in China.
So if I were a client of yours, would I then be able to work with you? You would open up relationships in China for me. I would use your network, essentially?
Yes. Yep, exactly.
So you'd be a first stop.
Right, right. We hope that, you know, we could be the first stop and also the one stop, which means that we really offer a package, you know, based on the client's needs, and we involve it as an advisor to help them identify different risks or stakeholders in their China solution. Then we open up our network and pull out all the needed resources, either IP protection agency for their, you know, trademark registration, or engineering firm, you know, for them, you know, product or a design revamp, or on the ground management team to work with their Chinese suppliers to oversee their product, you know, manufacturing, timely delivery, those kind of things. So basically to take a lot of the hassles away from the clients.
Is it true, though, that that the relationship is stronger than a contract?
I would say it's true, but
okay.
Also to say you still need to have a very fine written, you know, contract.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the Chinese society has changed a lot, and whenever there's any dispute or, you know, argument about responsibility, they all will always look back to the contract as a starting point. So to get really a good contract written is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend, you know, our client to get a good contract written to cover, you know, the responsibilities, qualities, liabilities, and also very importantly, the IP protection, the confidentiality about their products or technology that they are going to use in China. To give them a full, you know, protection.
It's pretty much like doing business in the United States now. You still want to know your vendors and your people, and the better you know them, the better
Absolutely.
It's going to be. But you
right.
also want
yeah.
that written contract
right.
With having your attorney look it over, and if there's a dispute, you come back to that and resolve it, and away you go.
Right.
Well, and I'm thinking if you're going into a country that you haven't worked in before, it's really important to know those relationships here in this country. I mean, we do all the referrals and the have you heard of and credibility checking through friends.
Right,
it's
right.
It's easy here.
Right, but when you go overseas,
contacts in
yeah.
China.
Right. Tom,
pretty
you
scary
actually,
proposition to say,
yeah.
I want to outsource to China and I don't know anybody over there. How am I going to do this?
Right, you know, this kind of a panic or fear very often, you know, made the many Chinese business owners, you know, made a wrong start or start at a not a very good position. You know, they come to this fear, they say, I don't know how to start. You know, there are the big, huge, you know, a language difference, cultural barrier, you know, it seems it's so hard for me to overcome. So very often they just, you know, grasp whatever the first one they get in touch with, or, you know,
yeah, yeah.
They,
yeah.
know they know.
And hope.
And start to do business, you know, with them, you know, for, in China. And sometimes it could be disastrous, you know, without the right due diligence, without the right approach and a commitment to develop a strategy. So we came across so many, you know, bad stories or
sad experiences, you know, knockoffs.
Jeff, can you give us an example of a business that you've helped that wanted to do some business in China?
Sure. Yeah, I would start, you know, with one case. You know, this case, before we came in to help them, they've started doing business with China, and they got their Chinese suppliers in place already. But they have some unhappy experience with this Chinese supplier. The reason why they start to do business, because, you know, that's what kind of like a middleman or a connection introduced them to. They didn't do any due diligence about this firm, and they didn't do any screening of suppliers, competitive bidding. They didn't do that.
You might not have known how to do that in China.
Right, and they didn't, you know, seek any outside help to get this started. So, but they started right away, and once they saw the price was good, they started to do, you know, business with them. And they didn't get any advice on how to write a contract to protect their intellectual property, including the toolings that they develop at the supplier site. And they don't have any means to control the quality. So the quality issue has been an ongoing issue for them. And, you know, that's the main reason they want to bring us in to help them to solve. Basically, they want to say bye to this supplier, but they don't know how. And
how do they recover their tools and dies, and how do they prevent that person from competing with them?
Right, and we came in, we found, there's no contract even say that they own the toolings. And there's no contracts, you know, on how to officially end the relationship, you know, everything. So they were really in a kind of a bad situation. And we were caught in, and the first thing is we want to, you know, help them retrieve the toolings. And unfortunately, you know, the relationship between the two firms and between the Chinese company and our client got really bad. And The client got the suppliers in China got a really hostile attitude toward the company, saying, you know, they're not going to release the toolings. You know, they're going to hold it and let the client suffer, because they know their business, ongoing business, count on those tools.
Were you able to resolve it?
Yeah, we were able to resolve it. You know, it's a challenging task because it's a pretty hostile situation to be pulled in, but we utilize very strongly our local resources. You know, we use the local tax authorities, they're the local banks, which, you know, give loans to the Chinese firm to give them pressure, and we directly
happy pressure.
Yeah, we directly arrange the contact with the party secretary at the city to work with the Chinese plan. Let them know, you know, you got to be smart, and this is something you should not, you know, do better things about.
So were you able to set them up with another contractor in another facility?
Yes. Yep. And at this time, you know, we selected a pool of, you know, candidate firms, and we do the due diligence. We visit the firms. We got our survey, and we let all the firms, you know, do competitive bidding on the parts or products they made. And we developed a short list, and then we bring in the client to visit the firms and do the interviews and check their engineers.
So now they're armed with whatever they need to be able to make a good decision.
Exactly. So now they know exactly what they work with, and they know how to work with them. And we also help them to develop a local team, which at any time, if they need, they could come to the site to you know, to check with the Chinese plan to see, you know, whether everything is in place. So now the client is happy because they know they got the hands on those kind of things, and they know their things are under control.
This is really a common sense thing. If a businessman here was going to choose a major vendor in the United States, we're going to have multiple bids, and we're going to check them out, and we're going to do our due diligence, and we're going to visit the plant, and we're going to make sure that we protect our intellectual property and protect
our
guys.
Right.
And with your help, they can do the same thing in China, where maybe a businessman here that's never been to China doesn't know where to start over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But with all of your contacts, you go through the same process over there.
Right. Well, there's a question I'd like to bring up about intellectual property. You keep bringing it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what advice would you give to someone around the intellectual property part of it?
I would think, you know, no matter whether you want to, you know, sourcing, you know, have your manufacturing done in China or want to sell your technology or product to China, you need to consider getting your IP rights protected, which means, you know, you at the very beginning, you start to do business with China, you develop your IP rights protection solution or strategy or plan with a China advisor, you know, maybe get your trademark or brand names registered in China even before you made the first trip to China. And we got many, you know, interesting lessons from those neglections. And
mm-hmm.
because in China, the IP rights protection is registration based. So which means you use a lot of those brand name trademarks in the States or in other parts of the world, but if you never registered it under your name in China,
they don't exist.
Exactly. If someone registered first, it's theirs. You know, you have to,
so
you know, pay much more.
Similar to the United States, so you
right.
have to go through the same process.
Exactly, to get it back, you know, which could be a big barrier if they want to launch their business in China.
So that's part of the preparation. I wouldn't want to go over there, start doing business, and then have someone go, oh, that's mine.
Yeah, you know, we got the real case. One client came to us because their brand name and trademark got registered after they made the first trip to China, like it made a road show about their products and technology in China to see how this market respond. So after, it was a good trip, but they dispute a lot of, you know, business cards, you know, marketing materials in China. So half a year later, when they are ready to launch it, they just found out their domain, their brand name, trademark got registered in China by a different company, a Chinese company.
Mm-hmm.
And now they came to us, you know, try to get a help to find a solution. And we helped them to find a very good Shanghai-based Chinese local IP protection agency to help them talk to that firm and hopefully to get it resolved.
Jeff, we're quickly running out of time, but for our listeners, our business owner listeners, and any other business execs that are interested in learning more about China and opening that up with perhaps a product or some kind of something they want manufactured there, how do they contact you? How do they learn more about it? I know that you've got some programs you put on.
Right. And I work at Lurie, and it's always kind of convenient for them to contact my firm and ask for the China service team or China strategy consulting group. And also, we also have those kind of quarterly China business colloquiums that we invited experienced China experts or entrepreneurs successfully doing business in China to let them speak to the audience about, you know, their lessons and experience of doing business with China.
And you still organize trips and go over there with business owners?
Yep, every year. Yeah. So,
do you have a newsletter?
We are kind of in process of developing it. So that's really a good question. You know, that I really want to, you know, send out newsletters to our contacts in the future.
Jeff, this has been fascinating, and we're just about out of time. For our listeners, if you go to todaysbusinessradio.com and click on Jeff Jang's site, you can contact him and find ask your questions and attend some of his seminars. But we're all out of time for today, so I'm Tom Lyons with my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer Georgie Jorgensen. I'd like to thank Jeff Jang from Lurie Beskoff Lapidus & Company for being with us today to discuss China strategies on todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.